We are the Mystery History Podcast. I'm Allison.
I'm Rachel.
Welcome to episode 171, Dennis Nilsen. Is that how you
Who
say
suggested
that?
This?
I don't know.
Somebody suggested it, right?
I think so.
But so you don't know who it was?
I don't. So if you suggest this, tell us.
We'll shout you out next time.
Yes. So we are returning from our break from the holidays. We hope you guys had a great holiday. We sure did. And now we're ready to get back to the grind. But we have a few things business related we want to talk about first before we get into this. So we have decided, instead of dropping weekly episodes, we are going to be dropping every other week episodes. So it's going to be 2 weeks in between episodes.
That's right.
We need to do this just with the status of our lives at this moment.
Exactly. It's not a choice.
It's not. But
it's a necessity.
But we will still be dropping weekly Patreon episodes. If you want to hear us weekly still, you can join our Patreon at patreon.com/mysteryhistorypodcast. You can join the $2 tier or the $5 tier if you just want to give us a little extra, some extra.
Mm-hmm.
And you can get all of those episodes plus all the backlog of all the other ones that are on there.
Which is lots and lots. So you'll hardly even have time to miss us.
Exactly. I mean, the weekly schedule might be something that we'll come back to at some point. But right now, we just need to be able to have the time to do the notes and provide you with good quality research and content. So that's why we are switching to the every 2 week.
Exactly.
We hope you all understand and it's all going to be okay. All right. The only other two things, merch, if you'd like to, I'm sure they're running a sale. I didn't check today, but they always say that they're stopping and they never do. So
they've never stopped.
Never. They have been running $16 t-shirt specials. The cool thing about the website, you can customize it however you see fit, whatever color, with several different images. So that is on TeePublic, and we have a link in the show notes. There's also a link on our link tree in Instagram or Facebook. And also, please follow us on Instagram and Facebook. The good thing about us dropping episodes every 2 weeks is that we'll be able to post more content about those episodes every day. So you'll get to see some more photos and things like that of what we're talking about. So it's just going to be a more in-depth look on the specific topics. And as always, if there's things that you want to hear, please let us know. Because of the every other week schedule, it might take us a little longer to get to you, but we promise that we will. And if we forget that you suggested it, but we do it, please let us know, because we're bad at that.
We are bad at that. We should be better at that.
We should be. All right. Well, that is all the business I had. Do you have anything else to add?
No. I enjoyed listening to you, though.
All right. Well, why don't you go ahead and... Is Nilsen?
Nilsen? Nilsen.
Okay.
I'm going with Nilsen.
Okay. That sounds good. Why don't you get us started on this fella?
All right. Well, Dennis Nilsen, he was born to Olav Magnus Nilsen.
Oh, my God.
And Elizabeth Duthie White on November 23rd, 1945 in Fraserburg, Aberdeenshire, Scotland. So in Scotland.
Yes.
Olav and Elizabeth had met when Olav, who originally was from Norway, had evacuated to Scotland in 1940 as part of the Free Norwegian Forces after the Germans occupied Norway during World War II. Okay. So he is a refugee. Olav was not really into being a dad and having a family, which eventually resulted in Olav and Elizabeth divorcing. They had lived with her parents after the marriage, and Olav never tried to get them their own place. And he really didn't sound like he technically even lived with them, but he did manage to get her pregnant 3 times during his visits.
So he at least visited 3 times.
Yeah. The way it was worded made it sound like every time he visited, she had a baby. But he just wasn't around. After the birth of her third child, Elizabeth concluded she had, quote, rushed into marriage without thinking, which, yeah, sounds like it. The couple divorced in 1948, and Elizabeth's parents, who were not fans of Olav, surprisingly,
yeah,
they were there to support her, though, and help raise her children.
Good. So she wasn't by herself.
Exactly.
Okay. Dennis was very close to his grandfather, Andrew, even though he was only 5 when his grandfather passed from a heart attack while out at sea. This impacted him greatly. He once said that while his grandfather would be out at sea, because he was a fisherman, that life would be empty until he returned. Quote, aw, that's sad.
Isn't it?
It is. When Andrew's body was returned to the family, Dennis's mother let him see the body and told him his grandfather was sleeping. And he was 5.
Yeah.
At this point.
He was almost 6, but yes.
Prior to Andrew's passing, Dennis became even more quiet than he already was and very withdrawn. He would retreat from any affection his family tried to give him and did not participate in any family activities. Didn't want to do it.
Yep.
Funnily enough, as time went on, he began to resent the adults in his family, his mother, grandmother, and eventually stepfather for all the attention they gave to his siblings, even though he didn't want it.
Yeah. That's some like real solid logic.
Right. Once his mother moved out to Stricton away from her mother's and remarried a man named Andrew, she had 4 more kids in 4 years with him. So she's just fertile myrtle, man.
She really is.
Wow.
And lots of Andrews. So her dad was named Andrew. She married an Andrew.
Okay.
Dennis hit puberty and found himself attracted to boys. He didn't share this with anyone, and he was ashamed. I mean, look, it was 1940 or 50s probably at this point, but, you know.
Yeah.
He believed the boys he was attracted to resembled his younger sister, Sylvia, and ended up molesting her for whatever reason.
Yeah, okay.
He was also molested himself by an older male, and at one point in his life, and he said he did not find the experience unpleasant. Okay. On another occasion, he was caressing and touching his older brother Olaf Jr. while Olaf was sleeping, and Olaf awoke and after that thought Dennis was likely gay, as you do, and would belittle his brother and call him hen, which is what Scottish people call girls.
Okay.
And this was in public, like he would pick on him after that. Dennis himself thought that he may be bisexual because of molesting his sister. He thought, well, I molested her, so maybe I'm bisexual. Both ways.
Wow, okay.
Yeah, which makes no sense.
Mm-mm.
And that was really, I mean, he had a pretty, I'm going to say this after all of that, a pretty normal childhood, it sounded like, except for all that. You know,
right, all of the stuff that he did with molesting and being molested is not his fault, but it seems like his mother was a good one anyway, and it might be good his father wasn't in the picture, really.
Yeah, and then he had the stepfather, and there was nothing bad to say about the stepfather. I mean, it sounds like he had like a semi-solid childhood here, and he was the one that was like doing strange things. So, yeah, I don't know. Very weird. He eventually joined the Army Cadet Force at the age of 14 and was thinking that the British Army could be his ticket out of what he deemed to be boring, Stricken. He was tired of being there.
Okay. And he probably...
His family was also a little poor, and he was tired of that, too.
Well, and it didn't seem like he probably particularly liked his family with his older brother calling him a hen and things like that, and then not really wanting any
affection or any. Yeah,
there was no reason really for him to stay.
No, not really.
He enlisted for 9 years in September 1961 when he was 16. He described the 3 years he was in training as the happiest of my life. Quote, he was assigned to the 1st Battalion of the Royal
Fusiliers.
Yeah, in Osnabrück, West Germany, where he served as a cook.
That's right.
In his deployment, Nelson began to increase his intake of alcohol. He described himself and his colleagues as a hardworking boozy lot. So everybody liked to party.
Yes. And I mean, they're young.
And that's what you do, right? Like, that's person I've known that's in the service, when they are young like that, that's what they do. They work and then they get drunk.
Exactly.
His colleagues recalled he often drank to excess in order to ease his shyness. On one occasion, Nielsen and a German youth drank themselves into a stupor. When Nielsen woke up, he found himself on the floor of the German youth's flat. No sexual activity had occurred, but this incident fueled Nielsen's sexual fantasies. So he liked it.
Yes.
Which initially involved his sexual partner, invariably a young, slender man, being completely passive.
So that's his, like, fantasy. Yep.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
These fantasies gradually evolved into his partner being unconscious or dead. So, okay, we're getting a little Jeffrey Dahmer-y.
Right. Like, he goes from just, I don't know, what sounds relatively normal, you know, he likes to be in control. Okay. And then, goes right into,
they need to be dead.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm. What segue occurs there? Like,
I don't know.
And how do you know that you like, how do you know that you like that? Unless
I don't know, but you know it. The way I read quite a few articles about him and about this situation, and there's a ton of information about his younger years before anything really happened, because he gave in-depth interviews, I think, and also had like pen pals, and books have been written. So there's just a lot available about his past and like why he did things and thoughts he had. And there were some stories I did skip out on in here, because we would be here all night if I did them all. Mm-hmm. But they were always like, it just seems like small things he just exacerbates into big things. So like seeing his grandfather dead, I think he exacerbates that situation into some of this, and then all the stuff with his siblings and
Okay.
I don't know. Well, that's just what I get from the guy.
He started pretending to be so drunk that he was passed out at gatherings and parties in the hopes that someone would take advantage of him. Wow.
Yeah.
And I'm sure probably did, right?
I don't know. It did not say, but I don't think so. I mean, the people that he was with just said, like, he drinks too much. But that was like part of his fantasy. So,
and he was gay, right? Or bisexual. So he would be hanging out with other men in service. So you'd have to find another gay man to want to take advantage.
Yeah.
And maybe there just wasn't any in his troop
around. Yeah, totally. I don't know.
Or there were, and they just weren't a-holes gonna that do took that. Advantage yeah. of drunk people.
Yeah, he's I want to make that a point. Like a double whammy.
Yeah.
Like the Venn diagrams need to overlap there. I don't know. Yeah, his chances were pretty low, but I don't know. In 1967, he was deployed to the state of Aden, which is now Yemen. This posting was much more dangerous than anywhere else that he had been so far. And at one point, Dennis was kidnapped by a taxi driver who beat him unconscious and placed him in the boot of his car.
Which is the trunk.
Yes. Oh, P.S. All of the articles are like from England.
Okay.
So it calls all the stuff whatever it is in England because or UK because this is Scotland. But yeah, into the boot of the car. After he was dragged out of the trunk, Dennis grabbed a jack handle, which I'm assuming is just like a jack, right?
Yeah.
Is it called That's jack what handle?
I mean, it sounds weird. Like just a jack, I think.
Yeah. Well, he took that, knocked the taxi driver to the ground, and then beat him unconscious. He then locked that man into the trunk of the taxi. So he got away. He escaped there, but that messed with him, obviously.
Well, yeah.
He witnessed things like his friend's dead bodies there. I mean, it was much more dangerous. People were actually dying, where that wasn't really happening anywhere else that he had been so far. Now, seeing dead bodies would traumatize most people. But Dennis, he also used that as fuel for his sexual fantasies, which is gross.
That is so gross.
Yeah. After his deployment, he was returned to the UK and served in Plymouth, Devon, then Cyprus. Then in 1969, the regiment was transferred to West Berlin, where the same year, Dennis had his first sexual experience with a female. And this was a prostitute whose services he solicited. He bragged of the sexual encounter to his colleagues, but later stated he found intercourse with a female both overrated and depressing.
Dang.
So well, he was definitely gay and not bisexual.
Well, and I mean, she wasn't dead, right? So that already gets you pretty far down on the totem pole.
Yeah, but I think he's
He likes men.
He likes men.
He ended his 11-year-long military career as a corporal in October of 1972. He returned to Stricken and his mother's home, where she voiced her concern for Dennis's lack of interest in women and starting a family. A few months later, at a group viewing of a documentary about male homosexuality with his brother, that's weird, Olav Jr. Mm-hmm. So they just go to this viewing.
It's a documentary. And, you know, it said a group viewing, but I think it was like his family and some family friends.
Oh, okay.
You know what I mean? Like, uh-huh. I don't think it was like a come to this homosexual documentary event. I think it was just some people that weren't just the people that lived in this house.
Okay. So he went with his brother. Everyone was speaking of the subject negatively, except Dennis, who defended gay rights. Olav Jr. and Dennis fought, and Olav Jr. ended up telling their mother that Dennis was gay. This resulted in an estrangement of Dennis from his family, and he moved to London and joined the Metropolitan Police. So they did not accept
sometimes
that.
Well, he would sometimes like write letters to his mom, like they would correspond, but he was 100% done with his brother and just wasn't around anymore.
Okay.
So in London, he began to visit gay pubs, and after a while, he resigned from the force. He was only in the force for about a year. Then he was a security guard. And ended up settling on a career as a civil servant at a job center. During this time, he had a few relationships, but they ended in failure, and Dennis came to the conclusion that he was unfit for a long-term relationship. He just thought, like, nobody could live with him.
Yeah.
And nobody could possibly want to be with him forever. And that's really when the bad stuff, like, really picks up there. When okay. he realizes that he thinks that he's like unfit.
Okay. Well, and that sucks too. Cause I mean, London, I feel like would probably be way more progressive than a smaller town, you know? So like he could be himself, mm-hmm. right? Like as much as you could be in the '70s, but.
Yeah. But and I mean, he tried, right? He had a few relationships, but they didn't go longer than a week.
Right.
So,
well, I'm sure some of that probably stems from like his family too, where like he felt like nobody, even though he kind of isolated himself, he probably felt and made himself a victim that nobody wanted to be around him. And then the fact that his family didn't accept him after he was gay. I mean, I could see where you
the
would
progression
have that.
Here. Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely.
All right. So let's talk about some stuff now. The bad stuff.
Yep.
While living at home at 195 Melrose Avenue, Dennis killed his first victim. Stephen Holmes was only 14 years old and had the unfortunate luck to have run into Dennis at the Cricklewood Arms pub on December 30th, 1978. Stephen was unsuccessfully trying to buy alcohol, and Dennis was drunk, like super drunk. So drunk.
Yep.
He thought Stephen was around 17 years old. Not that that matters, because it's still like not above the age. And he invited Stephen over to his house. Okay. So they're at his house. They went there. They drank until they fell asleep. And Dennis woke up in the morning to Stephen in his bed and was so insecure that he was worried Stephen would leave and he would be alone on New Year's Eve. This is classic Jeffrey Dahmer business right here.
Yeah.
Jeez. Okay. So he wouldn't be alone. Dennis strangled Stephen with a necktie until he was unconscious and then drowned him in a bucket of water in the kitchen.
That is a new one.
In a bucket of water?
Yeah. What's that look like?
So you fill a bucket.
Is bucket something different in England?
Because I don't think so.
How do you even do that?
Well,
I'm like picturing you holding a body upside down with their head in a bucket. Like,
no, I'm picturing it's a bucket in the sink and he just kind of drapes him over the side because he's unconscious, right? So he's not going to fight.
Yeah.
So he's not going to thrash about, which is what somebody would obviously do if their head was in a bucket of water. But
right.
And yeah. Then he just suffocated to death.
It's just weird to think about.
Okay.
But yes.
And that's not the worst of it. He then decides that he's going to masturbate not once, but twice over Stephen's body. And then he pulled, like, what's that guy? The telltale heart?
Yeah. Edgar Allan Poe.
Yeah, then he hit him under the floorboards. Like Eddie Allan Poe.
Yeah. How do you even do that?
I don't know.
It must be like a super old house thing. Like if you're in like an old house, you could hide people under the floorboards. Because like nowadays, that's not a choice.
No, it's not
you
a thing.
Can't do
I have
it.
I have floor on top of my floorboards. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know.
Yes.
Stephen's body was under those floorboards for almost 8 months, at which time Dennis built a fire in his garden and then burned the body in August of 1979. Could you imagine the smell?
And this is like, I need to like Google Earth this address because what I'm picturing, he is not in a house by himself. He is in a flat with other people. And his garden, I'm picturing like Shaun of the Dead, like you got a little backyard.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Like, what does
in
that
London,
look like?
Right? Yeah.
Yeah. So, yes, like small quarters. Ugh. And like nobody smelled that.
Right. Oh, God. Can you just imagine walking into somebody's house and then finding out later there's freaking bodies underneath your feet? Like, no way.
No. Mm-mm. In October of 1979, Dennis tried to murder a student named Andrew Ho from Hong Kong. He met Andrew at St. Martin's Pub and invited him back to his place for sex. When Dennis tried to strangle Andrew, he escaped and reported the incident to the police, but decided not to press charges.
Why?
So he was attacked. I don't know.
I would definitely press charges.
Yeah, for sure. Then, in December, Dennis met a 23-year-old Canadian student named Kenneth Okenden in a West End pub. Kenneth was in England visiting relatives, and Dennis offered to show him around London and then invited him to his place for dinner and more drinks. Once there, Dennis strangled Kenneth with a headphone wire while Kenneth was listening to the music.
God.
The next day, Dennis went and got a Polaroid camera and took pictures of Kenneth's body and ended up stowing him in the floorboards, too.
What?
Yeah.
How did I not know about this guy?
I thought the exact same thing. I was like, what? How did this slip under the radar?
Under the floorboard cracks, if
under
you
the
will.
Floorboards, yes. So, I don't know. He would get Kenneth's body out from the floorboards and set it in a chair while he would watch TV and drink. So he was using these people's bodies as like company.
Oh my God. Could you imagine somebody knocking on the door? What do you do?
Throw blankets.
Right. Like don't even think about that little thing I got going on over here. And
I mean,
don't smell anything.
Right? What do you do right now when someone knocks on the door? Because I don't answer it.
That's true. Like,
be doing the same thing.
I know when any visitors I want to come over are coming over. So yeah. I obviously don't want you.
We don't accept unexpected guests.
Oh, geez. Ugh, okay. May 17th, 1980, 16-year-old Martin Duffy had been out on the streets for multiple days after having hitchhiked to London without his parents' knowledge and was staying outside by the Euston Railroad Station. Which, that whole thing is just crazy in itself still to me, hitchhiking at all, period.
Crazy. Right. How do you survive that?
Right.
It is insane.
So, uh-oh, my thing just, okay. Dennis encountered him on his way home from a conference and offered the exhausted and hungry boy a meal and a place to sleep. Like, what a good guy.
Yeah.
Once asleep in Dennis's bed, that's weird. I would not sleep in somebody's bed. I'd be like, I'll take the couch or like.
Yeah, that is weird, isn't it?
Yeah. Martin was strangled until unconscious and then dragged to the kitchen where he was drowned in the sink. Again.
No bucket this time, though.
No bucket. He must have got like a stopper for the sink and just filled it up. After 2 days, Dennis put Martin's body under the floorboards after he began to bloat. They'd be seeping.
I don't understand how this was just not like noticed.
No.
Ugh. Between May of 1980 and the end of the year, Dennis killed 5 more times and attempted to kill another person. Only 26-year-old William Sutherland has been identified. All of their bodies he hid under the floorboard, which, of course, began to smell really, really bad.
Yeah.
There were maggots, and Dennis would spray insecticide. It said every day, twice a day, he would go spray insecticide, and he put deodorant. But this didn't do much, right?
No, because you got a rotting body.
Right.
Bodies.
Lots of them. In late 1980, Dennis removed and dissected the bodies and burned them in a bonfire on a waste ground behind his flat. Dennis threw in an old car tire to disguise the smell. So this was like everybody he threw out there.
Well, yeah, because he probably didn't have any more room.
Right.
How big is this place?
I don't know. That's what I'm saying. We got to Google Earth this place. They probably tore it down. But like, what is around it, and what were his neighbors doing, or the people that lived in the same building as him? I don't know. It's wild. But I mean, the smell of a tire can mask a lot of things, but I don't know how the house was not found out. In 1981, he killed 4 more unidentified boys and men by April. He once again stowed them beneath the floorboards and at one point removed all of their organs and discarded them on the waste ground behind his flat and in just in the regular old trash.
Jeez. He's ballsy.
Yeah. And so all of these people that are unidentified, he remembers murdering them and like what happened, and he talks about like, if you want to find information on those, you can. He talks about them, but for time's sake, I cut a lot of that out. But yeah, they just don't know who they are.
Wow. All right. 23-year-old Malcolm Barlow was the last person to be murdered at Melrose Avenue. Dennis found Malcolm just slumped against a wall outside his house on September 17th, 1981. Dennis asked Malcolm if he was okay, and Malcolm told him his epilepsy medication made his legs weak. Oh.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, he was like having a hard time.
Dennis took Malcolm up to his flat and called an ambulance from his house?
Yes.
What? And okay, if you're just walking in all willy-nilly, like, oh, this guy's just like giving me a place to stay, you'd have to smell that.
I know. I don't know, dude. I don't know. I don't know how. And well, and the fact that somebody was stopped, slumped up against his house, tells me that he was in a city. Like, he was not on the outskirts of London. Mm-hmm. It sounds like he was in London. I don't know. Like, that's just... I don't know.
Wow.
And he called an ambulance. I did not expect that.
No, for so many reasons. Like, you're probably going to kill this guy. And you have bodies, like the smell, I'm sure. Like, just wow.
I wonder, though, he probably took him like outside for the ambulance. You know what I mean?
I'd hope so.
I bet he did. So I don't think a bunch of people were in his place, but
yeah,
just the fact still. That there was like a weak man and he called the ambulance.
Yeah. Okay, the next day, so they took Malcolm to the hospital. The ambulance took Malcolm to the hospital. And the next day, Malcolm was released and went around to Dennis's trying to probably thank him for helping him. Malcolm accepted an invitation in, and after eating dinner and drinking some rum and cokes, Dennis strangled him.
Yeah. What an a-hole. And why did you even call an ambulance for him if you were going to do that?
Maybe Dennis is like, oh, today I'm not feeling very murdery, but maybe tomorrow we can reconvene. This is ridiculous.
Right?
Okay, so yeah. So he strangled him, and the next day stowed his body under the kitchen sink this time. So floorboards,
he's just putting
no.
People everywhere. Like, what? Under the sink?
How could you fit a body under the sink? You'd have to break them in half, right? I mean,
I don't know.
A body wouldn't fit under my sink. Would a body fit under your sink?
Yeah.
If you broke them in
but
half?
But why? No, you would just, they'd have to be on their backs and their legs would have to be squished up. And then they'd have to be like, I mean, it could work.
So
I just
thought about
but
it
why?
A lot.
But why?
I don't know.
Like, I don't know.
Sure. Why all of this? Why all of
Agreed.
This?
I don't know. Because he thinks that nobody loves him long enough to stay with him and he's insane.
So basically what that's telling me is it's getting, the separation is getting like closer and closer together. Like first it was under the floorboards. Now that's not close enough for him. Now it's the kitchen sink. Next it's going to be just sitting in a chair in the living room.
Or he ran out of room in the floorboards.
True.
Man. Hard to say. Could be anything.
Why would you put him in the kitchen? That's where you eat.
I don't know.
Ugh. Okay. Shortly after, Dennis was asked to vacate his flat because the landlord was making renovations. Holy shit. I bet they don't expect the renovations they're going to have to do. The day before he left, he burned the dissected 5 bodies he had. So 5.
5.
Along with another car tire. I wonder what the ratio is between bodies and car tires. Like, when do you have to add another one?
How many car tires do you need?
Yeah. I would say 5 is a lot for one tire.
Yeah, you're pushing it. I feel like you're pushing it. That's a lot to cover for one tire.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Probably add 2.
And how do you have this big of a bonfire at a place where also you would have somebody slumped up against your house?
Yeah.
And you know? Like, what is this place?
And where are you getting these car tires? I just don't see car. I mean,
where
I don't
is
know.
He getting these car tires?
I don't know.
It sounds like he lives in the country, but then part of it sounds like he lives in the city. And so I don't know. I don't know. What's this place look like? I need to know. It's out of control. And also he has access to all these people that are just like, yeah, I'll go over to yours for a while, which it would not happen here. You know what I mean? Like, we go out to the bars, we're not driving 30 minutes over to somebody's house and then back again, you know, like that's not happening. So they have to be walking together to,
and nobody noticed
at.
Nobody noticed anything. Like, this is a lot
I
of people
a lot of people. Yeah, no, I guess, well, I think they maybe did and I just don't have notes on it because I'll talk about it later, but there's a couple documentaries and things out there for this, and one of the documentaries that just came out is looking at what the police did wrong in this. Mm-hmm. So I think they did have opportunities to catch, and they probably were looking for somebody, but I don't comment on it as much as I probably could. So you'll have to watch that documentary.
Where was that at?
I'm telling you at the end of this. Hold on.
Netflix?
No, it's from the BBC.
Oh, okay.
It's a 4-part series re-examining the Metropolitan Police and the case.
Okay. Yep. I'm going to watch it because I got to know more.
I know, right?
Like, what the hell?
I'm going to watch all of this stuff. I just don't understand how we completely missed this. I've never heard of this guy before.
No, me neither.
And he killed a lot of people.
Yeah. And wow.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's my turn to read and I took a drink. All right. He moved to an attic flat next. Oh, his landlord gave him like attic? His landlord gave him like $1,000 to get out. Like, I think he did. He was like, no, I'm not leaving. And he was like, here's $1,000, get out. And he's like, okay, that's enough money, I'll get out. But he didn't want to leave. So I think like him having to deal with all those bodies was probably like very stress inducing. I would imagine. And so then wait, he moved a second. To an attic.
Yeah, an attic. Where are you going to stick the bodies now, bro?
Well, let's find out.
Oh, God.
This is 23 Cranley Gardens. And despite the name, he did not have access to a garden this time. So he's in an attic.
Ugh.
Can't store any bodies under the floorboards. And you don't got a garden.
He probably ran out of tires.
Yeah, anyway. He's probably fresh out of tires. He continued to have boys and men come over to his house, but he didn't assault anyone for a while, except a 19-year-old named Paul, but he stopped himself. So he's still, right? He's still seeing people. He's still bringing people over, but he's not murdering anybody.
Okay. That is until March 1982. Dennis invited 23-year-old John Howlett over after meeting him at a, what do you think it is? What do you think it is?
Oh, it's a pub.
It's a pub. John fell asleep on Dennis's bed. Again, no.
Weird.
Doesn't happen. And Dennis decided to kill him. John put up a big time fight, but ultimately he was overpowered. Strangled with an upholstery strap and drowned in the bathtub this time. Dennis had bruises on his neck for over a week from John trying to strangle him. Dennis dismembered John's body and flushed the skin and organs down the toilet. And then he just threw the bones in the trash. And can you imagine? Like, I listened to Theo Von a lot, and he had a Trash Man of New York on. And they were talking about like trash collection and everything like that. It makes sense. Like, you could probably throw away so many things because they're not digging through it. I mean, unless you have like a neighbor that's wanting cans or something like that. Like, nobody's going through. They're just dumping it and going to the next thing. And then they compact it all to make more room. I mean,
you could do that in our trash.
I know.
I thought you were talking about just in New York. I'm like, anybody can do that.
I just thought about it. I just always thought, like, why would they dump it in the trash? That's so stupid. You'd get caught. No, you probably wouldn't.
No, not really. Yeah. After it goes in there, they have no idea where they picked it up at. They just have a general vicinity at that point if they find it later anyways. So, yeah, I don't know. Just threw them in the trash. I also want to throw in here that all this time, Dennis is still working as a civil servant. And he would call off, like, in chunks of time. Like, they can look at his time off calendar and kind of tell when he committed some of these murders. And because of that, I think that's probably another thing in the BBC documentary where they're like, this was really obvious. So I'm guessing. I don't know that. But that was happening on here, too.
What kind of time? Like, that is some time management to have a full-time job. Kill all these people. We can't even do a podcast every week.
I know, right?
I mean, geez, we need to
know.
Maybe we could learn a lesson from Dennis.
No lessons from Dennis. But yeah, I mean, and he's taking his time off to deal with this kind of stuff. And then listen to this. In May of 1982, Dennis brought home a 20-year-old gay man named Carl. But Carl was depressed and was not looking for sex. So some of these people came over looking to drink more, looking for sex with them, all those different reasons. But Carl was not looking for sex, to which Dennis said, yeah, we're not going to have sex, but let me give you lots of alcohol. Like, come over to my house. I'll get you super drunk. Carl ended up sleeping on a sleeping bag at Dennis's. And the way this goes down, Dennis started to strangle him. Carl, like, kind of came to and thought that he was, like, tied up on the zipper of the sleeping bag and that that's what was strangling him and that Dennis was trying to help him. but then he went like unconscious. Dennis tried to drown him in the bathtub, which Carl remembers. And yeah, Dennis then sat Carl in a chair. So he thought he was dead. Tried to drown him in the bathtub. Thought he was dead. Sat him up in a chair and like was eating dinner.
Oh my God.
And Dennis's dog starts licking Carl's face, which made Dennis realize that Carl was still alive. Ooh. So Dennis goes over and starts rubbing his limbs and his heart to increase circulation and starts covering him up with blankets and tells Carl that he had almost strangled himself on the zipper of the sleeping bag and that Dennis had saved him. And Carl was in and out of consciousness for 2 days.
And Dennis was taking care of him the whole time.
And Dennis is taking care of him and told him that he like saved him from strangling himself on the sleeping bag. When able to start asking Dennis about what happened, like asked him about the water, Dennis told him that he was in shock and that he had tried to use cold water to like get him to come to. Yeah. And so after he basically is, you know, able to, Dennis takes him to a railway station and it's like, bye.
What?
We should hang out sometime.
Oh,
and that's the
God.
End of it. That's the end of it. I mean, Carl comes back to tell this story in trial.
Oh, but like, could you imagine being Carl? Like,
no, he's like, he probably had no freaking idea.
Oh my God. He probably thought that for, I don't know when the trial starts, but I mean, probably years being like, oh, what a nice guy. What a nice guy.
What a weird night.
Oh my God.
Because I mean, he was really drunk too. I mean, that's why he's able to tell him those things, because he had to have been super drunk.
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
It's crazy.
Okay. October 1982, 27-year-old Graham Allen was invited to Dennis's for a meal and was strangled, and his body was kept in the bathtub for 3 days. Did he not take a shower then? Ew.
I guess not.
Dennis then dissected Graham's body on his kitchen floor. He's really into kitchens.
Yeah. Yes. Yes.
Hmm. January 26, 1983, 20-year-old Stephen Sinclair was last seen with Dennis walking towards a Subway. Like the restaurant?
No. Like a, it actually said towards the tube or something, and I changed it to the Subway.
Okay. Stephen passed out from drugs and alcohol at Dennis's place, and of course, Dennis strangled him at this time with a necktie and a rope. He dissected Stephen's body and kept various dismembered parts of his body in different places around his house, wrapped in plastic bags and bandaging. Yeah. Why? Dennis tried to flush the skin, organs, and smaller bones of 3 of his victims.
Yeah.
Does that go into the water supply?
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, I guess poop goes in there too, but...
I mean, they filter it out. They filter. I mean, it goes through like multiple layers of filtering systems. So yes, all the big stuff definitely gets filtered out. And then it just gets smaller and smaller filtering stuff out. And then they dump a bunch of chemicals in there and it's safe to drink all of a sudden.
Oh my God. Okay.
Now you know.
Now we know.
Oh, yes. 3 victims. On February 4th, so that was on the 26th, around that time when he decided he needed to get rid of all 3 of these victims' skin, organs, down the toilet. February 4th, Dennis complained to his landlords that the drains for the flat were clogged. Apparently, he didn't realize he was why they were clogged.
Oh my God, what an idiot.
Yeah. So this guy, Michael Catran, comes over. He's a plumber and it's nighttime, like it's in the evening. And I guess the landlord's not around and Dennis is like doing the stuff. But the plumber informed Dennis that the drains were packed with a fleshy substance and small bones. Dennis joked that someone was flushing their Kentucky Fried Chicken.
What? Oh, no.
So, in the morning, Michael and his supervisor came back. And they come back to clear the drain out and find that it was already cleared out.
I'm sure it is.
That's not really normal to show up and somebody else has already done your job. So they start investigating the pipes leading to the drain, and they found more bone and flesh in a pipe coming from none other than our good friend Dennis's flat. The police were informed, and listen to this. Now, when I say that there is flesh and like small bones, I'm thinking, like, up until this point, I was thinking like really small pieces, right? Like just really small pieces of flesh, like raw chicken torn up or something is what it's got to look like, right? No, because they took some of this stuff to a pathologist. And the pathologist confirmed that the bones were human and that one of the scraps of flesh was from a neck and had marks indicative of a ligature strangulation. So it was not little tiny pieces.
What the hell was he thinking? That was just going to go away? And I'm sure, like, as soon as that plumber came in and said that, he's like, oh, shit. And he went to the store and bought a snake and tried to clear it. Oh, my God. God, this is insane.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Ugh. Three officers went to his home, and while waiting for Dennis to open the door, they noticed the smell, finally, of decomposition at his front door. So did the plumber. Maybe the plumber is just like used to smells not great.
No, the plumber didn't go in the house. He was at the drain. So, like, outside at the, where your line, like, hooks up with the other line, I think. Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
When officers informed Dennis the blockages were human remains, Dennis acted, what do you mean? But when the officers told him to tell them where the rest of the body was, he took them right to the closet containing remains. Officers asked if there was more, and Dennis said, it's a long story. It goes back a long time. I'll tell you everything. I want to get it off my chest, not here at the police station. Quote. Whenever somebody, if you're an officer and you ask somebody, is there more? And they say, it's a long story. Oh, geez.
Yeah.
Call the wife. Point, you're not coming home.
They only know one. Yeah. Yeah, it's a long story. No. Not interested in anything of that nature.
Dennis was obviously, thankfully, finally arrested. And on the way to the station, Dennis was asked if the remains belonged to one or two people. Oh, and Dennis responded, 15 or 16 since 1978.
I mean, he like snapped like a twig. Like, he's not covering up for himself at all. He was like, all right, like, I'm caught. Here it goes. That's why there's so much information. There's so much information when I tell you out there. Yeah.
It doesn't seem like, they gave him the slightest bit of pressure other than just like a general question on how many bodies is this? And he just, phew.
Yeah. They've got not that much information. And he's like, let me just tell you everything.
Oh, my gosh.
Probably because
all manner of body parts were found at Dennis's home. You can look it up if you like, but there were legs, torsos, skulls, all kinds of junk just laying about.
Yeah, so, and they were not all from the same person.
So he knew that whenever they came that he was done.
Yeah, he was caught. Police interviewed Dennis 16 times over the following days. And ended up with over 30 hours of interviews, which you could probably listen to.
Yeah.
Honestly. Dennis was adamant that he was uncertain as to why he had killed, simply saying, I'm hoping you will tell me that. So when he was asked for his motive for his murders, that was his response. He was adamant that the decision to kill was not made until moments before the act of murder. So he's basically saying this was not premeditated. Most victims had died by strangulation on several occasions. He had drowned the victims once they were strangled into unconsciousness. Once the victim had been killed, he typically bathed the victim's body, shaved any hair from the torso to conform it to his physical ideal, then applied makeup to any obvious blemishes upon the skin. The body was usually dressed in socks and underpants before Nilsson draped the victims around. So, like, he would put them on chairs, he would lay them in the bed, and he would, like, drape them on top of him, like, just, you know, all around.
Oh.
And he would talk to them. With most victims, Dennis masturbated as he stood alongside or knelt over the bodies, and Dennis confessed to having occasionally engaged in intercrural sex, which I didn't know what that was, but I looked it up, and it's thigh sex. Like, you get the picture, right?
No, I don't. What do you mean?
He would push their legs together.
Oh.
And do that, yeah.
Okay.
With his victim's body. But he stressed to investigators he never actually penetrated any of his victims. Which, like
who cares?
Right. Like,
bisex is fine, but if he would have actually penetrated, it would have been too far.
Like tomato, tomato about? Over here, friend. he said that his victims were too perfect and beautiful for the pathetic ritual of commonplace sex. So he just did thigh sex instead.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Okay.
Ridiculous.
Oh, good old Dennis. He was sentenced to life in prison. He began his sentence at HMP Wormwood Scrubs, and in December of 1983 was cut on the face and chest with a razor blade requiring, 89 stitches.
Wow. Yeah, it was like deep.
Wow.
But he survived.
He was transferred lots of times, and in 2003, he was transferred to HMP Full Sutton, and that's where he died on May 12th, 2018. From a pulmonary embolism and retroperitoneal hemorrhage. Mark Austin, a former confidant of Dennis's, revealed that an edited version of the history of a drowning boy was to be posthumously, I can't say that word, is that
I
right?
I can't either. It's weird. Posthumously?
Published by Red Door Press. The autobiography, based upon the 6,000 pages of typewritten notes that Dennis authored while incarcerated, examines his life and crimes and is edited by Austin, who became a pen pal of Dennis in the years prior to his death and who exchanged more than 800 letters with him.
Yeah.
The autobiography was published on January 21st, 2021. I would read that probably.
There is a lot, it seems, of like newer things that have come out about this, but maybe because he died in 2018, I don't know.
Yeah.
But that autobiography came out in 2021. Other media that you can check out if you're interested, there's a movie, I think it's a movie called Dez, so DES, that came out in 2020 and stars David Tennant as Dennis Nilsson. You know David Tennant?
No, who is that?
He is one of the Doctor Who's.
Wait,
I mean, you would know him if you've seen.
Oh yeah, the like main guy you think of when you think of Doctor Who.
Yeah. Yes.
Okay.
He's also in Harry Potter. Memories of a Murderer: The Nilsson Tapes is a 2021 documentary that's on Netflix.
Yes.
So you can check that out. And then The Nilsson Files came out in 2022 and is a BBC four-part series re-examining the Metropolitan Police and the case. So what they could have done differently. So there's lots of stuff. And I mean, this is an interesting one. I think there's a lot to kind of like go into here. Thinking about like his wives. And there's just so much information from him, which is not normally the case.
Right.
So, yeah, there's a lot.
Wow.
There's a lot here. And man, like just messed up too. I mean, these were all young people in the prime of their life. Some of them were literally children. It's a lot.
And so many.
It's a lot of
them.
People. A lot. And I'm really interested. So I read a lot of articles, but they didn't really talk much about the police's, like, you know, lack of impact here. What were the police doing? So I'm really interested to watch that 4-part BBC series to see more about, like, was it really obvious that something was going on? I mean, it's London, so it's not technically that many people, right? I don't know how big London is.
I feel like London's massive.
I don't even know if it is. Is it like New York City sized?
Let's see. Is London...
Because this is only like 16 people over the course of multiple years. So maybe it's not that many.
Let's see. It's bigger. So
New York City?
London in 2022, we're talking about. London's population was about 9.5 million and New York's was 8.1.
Okay.
But I mean,
what could they possibly have done? This is like
a
drop in a bucket.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah, that makes more sense. I think we were thinking of, like, if this happened in our town, like 12 young gay men just went missing after being at pubs, I feel like we would know about it.
You're right.
But not in London.
Well, I just can't believe that I've never heard anything about this guy. Like, his name, didn't know it.
Didn't. I thought this... I thought of one of the stories that we've done, but it was in America and it was not this at all. So yeah, I never,
Wow.
Never knew. It's crazy.
All right. You want to cite your sources?
Yeah. I used criminalminds.fandom.com, wikipedia.com, which has a ton of information, murderpedia.com, biography.com, and walesonline.co.uk.
Wow. Okay.
So yeah.
Well, I'm excited to watch those. I'm definitely going to watch both of the documentaries. Probably not the movie because I'm sure it's trash.
I'm going to need the BBC one to be available somewhere. You got to text me when you know where it's at. I don't want to pay for
it. Yeah, I'll look.
I mean, I'm already paying for it, probably.
Yeah, I was trying to see. Oh, so Dez is a mini series.
Is it? Okay.
Yeah.
I couldn't tell. I don't remember.
It looks like it's you have to buy it. Like, it's season one is on Amazon for $2.99. And it's got a 4.6. So, like, that's really good.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
So
interesting. Maybe it'll
I
be
will watch it
later.
Yeah. Okay.
Not for
$2.99. We hope that you enjoyed episode 171 on Dennis Nielsen. We hope that you have a great week and we will see you next time. Bye.
Bye.